The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles, and that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the Legion of Superheroes, who investigate crime, and the science police, who bumble around the crime scene. These are their stories.
Legion of Superheroes, number 312. Good Cop, Bad Cop? Published June 1984. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Keith Giffen.
I will actually say that I enjoyed this two-parter in 312 and 313.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting that we got to take a look at some science policey stuff and see how they kind of operate. I find it super fascinating that in the future they thought that the police force could be lessened and let the robots do all the heavy lifting.
And, you know, the thing about it that's really interesting is I think we're probably, you know, a good 40 years into Legion history, and we've seen the science police in their, you know, blow up bubble helmets for pretty much the whole time. And I don't think we've really gone behind the scenes with them to this level before. We've seen, you know, like, oh, here's Dron and here's Siobhan and here's all these other people who rhyme. But this is actually two issues of weird future police, quote unquote, procedural, which is something that they've never done in Legion. I think it's especially coming out of that Omen nonsense.
Didn't in the future, in our past, didn't they do a future police series with the science police? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
No, there was a science police mini in the 90s. Which,
that's probably the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it tied into the reboot Legion, but I don't remember. I want to say it was like 97, 98. I feel like it was post collapse of the industry in 96, but I don't know. We'll get there soon enough, I'm sure, because that has Legionnaires in it, which means it's probably going to be part of this podcast.
We also find out from the first page that Gigi loves old books and detective stories and making out with Sunboy, who has really ugly boots.
And a speed suit like Thaddeus Venture with a monogram of his little Sunboy symbol. And it is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
I don't know if it's ridiculous, but
it just feels anachronistic. It feels, I know I've been harping on this, and I promise this is the last time I'm going to say it.
No, it's not. Feels like it won't be, dear listener.
It's taken. It feels old school. It feels like something out of the Jose Munoz stuff, which is taking place in the 30s and 40s. And this just, it doesn't feel futury to me. It feels pastory. And that's the last time I'm going to say the JM word.
It won't be.
That's the last time I'm going to say it. I'm going to reference it a lot, especially if you're going. Actually, 312 isn't as bad because it's inked by Carl Kiesel. And Carl, if you really pay close attention, Carl is doing a lot more forceful Carl Kieselness than we've been getting from the usual inkers, from Malmsteen and others. Because that Sunboy on page two, that last page face, that's a Carl Kiesel face. That's not a Keith Giffen face.
Mm.
Yeah.
Their fun times get interrupted because they have to report to a riot at the Metropolis Stadium. Now, again, keep in mind, this is something that is over, what, 40 years ago?
Right.
The Metropolis Stadium seats 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. Now, if you believe the reports out of North Korea, the Rungrado First of May Stadium in Pyongyang holds 150,000 spectators, so about a half of what the Metropolis Stadium would seat. Otherwise, if it's not, if you don't want to believe what the North Koreans say, the Narendra Modi Stadium in India is the largest stadium with 132,000 seating capacity. If we're, and those are like closed stadiums. If we're talking about an open stadium, then the Indianapolis Motor Speedway holds 400,000 spectators. So there's already something today that holds more people than the Metropolis Stadium in the year 2984. If you're going back to regular closed stadiums, Michigan Stadium is, I think, the largest in the United States with 107,601 seating capacity. And most large college, I guess I'm talking Big Ten or whatever they are, Big 14, they always hold around 100,000 spectators. So next time you go and watch your dear Michigan football team, realize that you're about one third of what the Metropolis Superdome will hold.
Well, I suppose that's kind of a thing. Wasn't the Indianapolis Motor Speedway around in 1984?
It may have been, but like I said, this is an open thing. Right, so they have seats, but they also have infield stuff, and they've added on to it in a number of years. So it has the capacity to hold 400,000 if they want.
So all I know about Indianapolis is cars.
Yeah. So, and again, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, not enclosed. We're talking about something that has a complete circle around it for spectators.
Yeah. And so, of course, cars too.
Meanwhile, back at the riot.
I know Colossal Boy, thankfully, happens to be at the riot on a double date. So, Colossal Boy and Element Lad and their lady friends are in the middle of a giant riot. Now, one of them's a giant. One of them can turn anything into anything else. So, of the Legionnaires who could have been at a Moops ball game,
I would think it would be Cosmic Boy.
Cosmic Boy plays Magno Ball.
Oh, that's right. I thought it was,
Moops Ball.
What's the difference?
I always read it as Cosmic Boy and Magno Ball being sort of a take on maybe baseball combined with tennis, whereas Moops Ball has elements of football.
Ah, okay.
But, you know, I don't know. Timberwolf is a big Moops Ball fan.
Okay.
So I take Timberwolf. I think Timberwolf is, you know, basically a big musclehead redneck. So I'm thinking football, and he also likes
maybe it's
space
rugby
NASCAR
or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's this scene where the science police and the robots are trying to calm everybody down because there's explosions going off. It's not necessarily a riot, but a riot is broken out because people are trying to escape. And there's the line that says, "Let me out of here. I'm not getting trapped by bombs." And, you know, now the only danger now is you'll crush each other, says Colossal Boy. And I went back, and there have been some instances where there have been riots or, you know, situations happen at sporting events where people are killed by riots and being crushed to death. The Hillsborough disaster at Sheffield, England in 1989, which is a few years after the events of this comic, killed 97, and hundreds of people were injured because they were crushed. I think that if I remember the soccer history correctly, that's basically the end of the out of control hooliganism at soccer events because of that event. But again, that's not the largest event. I think that's just one that a lot of people point to. There was an incident in Lima, Peru in 1964 where 328 people were killed because of, if I remember correctly, somebody didn't like what the ref called, went out and smacked him, and then the police took it upon themselves to beat the guy to death, and that caused everybody in the stands to go and attack the police. To go and attack the police, which meant more police come in and beating people. So these ideas that people getting trampled or getting you know, killed. Anytime I see something like this in the comics, I always think, oh my gosh, remember that soccer stadium disaster yeah. where all those people were killed? And then you look into it and it's like, no, there's many of those around the world yeah. that have happened.
I always think of the 1979 Riverfront Coliseum problem. Well, it wasn't a problem. It was actually several. I think 11 people were trampled at a concert by The Who, which ended up being an episode of WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. No, I don't remember that episode.
Yeah, it was the first tour with the new drummer after Keith Moon's death. And they had some miscommunication about when general ticket holders could get into the actual stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, you know, everything came down, essentially the crowd surged towards two doors that were mm-hmm. open, mm-hmm. but there were a bunch of doors that were closed. And I think, yeah, I want to say 11 people ended up being crushed. And it was like,
Interesting. Yura is on this mission briefly. She gets a one panel mention about, her wanting to help, but Colossal Boy's like, you better stay out of the way. And then yeah. the science police gas the attendees.
there's some stuff in here that I know is meant to be just futuristic, but the gassing of the attendees, and I think next issue we learn the whole how do we question a suspect? Well,
oh,
we
yeah, you
stick
put
him
in
the brain machine.
The thought machine, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's all very, you know, Minority Report with Tom Cruise. But yeah, that moment where they gas the whole place and then Chief Zendak shows up and just yells and breaks up a riot by yelling, break it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't know how it would have read in 1984, but it feels very, you know, authoritarian, big brother.
Well, considering it was 1984, maybe that was kind of the point.
That could be
for that, but also
that is actually a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
But the other thing that I find really fascinating about this is it's a terrorist attack on a stadium. And the only thing that I can think of before this was, you know, was it Black Sunday where the guy was going to smash the Goodyear blimp into the Super Bowl, that movie mm-hmm. about what's going on. But, you know, as far as major terrorist attacks, of course, there's always terrorist attacks, right? You can go and look and see what's going on with the Irish war, lots of bombings there. But for Americans, we've pretty much at this point been kind of sheltered from that. In 1983, there was the truck bombing of the U.S. Marine base in Beirut, killing 241 Marines. I remember that. But it would still be another year or two when we would see Air India Flight 192 downed by a terrorist bomber, and then 1988, the Lockerbie, Scotland bombing. So, you know, there are like bombings and those kinds of terrorist attacks, and certainly in other countries. But the ones that really impact Americans were relatively few and far between. Even the first bombing of the World Trade Center didn't happen until the early 90s. So you're probably almost a decade. Yeah, almost a decade away from where this is at. So it's interesting that, you know, as they're writing this, Giffen and Levitz are like, well, what would happen if terrorism increased in the future? Would the science police have, you know, some kind of a system in place to kind of deal with terrorism? And so to just bring up this idea of terrorism, in this case, in this issue, it's just a mad bomber. And we've seen mad bombers before in the Legion of Superheroes. But I just found that very fascinating.
It is interesting. And I feel like, in a way, it's kind of, it almost shows how the possible, I don't want to say worst case scenario, but the bad things that, you know, Giffen and Levitt see coming in 1,000 years are actually not as bad as the things that might be happening in the next 5 or 10 years reality.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And you just see that escalate after. After that,
you see the gates really kind of flood open. But mm-hmm. yeah, that's interesting, too. And of course, we get these sequences where the science police shows what they actually do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come in, they're doing the investigation, they're looking, they're getting the survivors out. And Gigi mentions that there are 100 science police members On Earth.
On Earth, yeah. And that's what I find.
On the planet.
And with most of them like set to patrol people, Metropolis.
Yeah, 12 people in Metropolis. So a full, you know, 12% of the police force of the entire world is in Metropolis, which
yeah.
at this point is, you know, a big chunk of the Eastern Seaboard. But
yeah, in fact, in the next issue in 313, in the mm-hmm. back, they actually have a map of Metropolis and show what portions, you know, all of New York, New Jersey, going all the way up to Maine, down in, into the Boston, New York corridor, all included mm-hmm. in that. So you get a lot of that in there. So, you know, that's interesting that you have like a dozen. Now, that being said, we also find out in the next issue that this is not counting all of the science police, because there are science police that are off planet doing off planet right. science police things. But that just yep. seems like a very small police force. You're really relying on robots and AI to do a lot of stuff.
And honestly, you know, again, that's the shiny, happy future in play.
Sure.
Up until this point, it has worked. I mean, they come out and say it. Sometimes having 12 science policemen seems like too many in Metropolis, and then a situation pops up like this. So it, yeah, I really enjoy that part. And I like the fact that Zendak points out this is the first time his procedures for this sort of thing have failed.
Right. And they find out through shenanigans that someone has mm-hmm. tampered with the computer system, and they suspect that it's someone on the inside, a science police person. And yeah. so then we get two guys going undercover with this.
Yes, which I'll give them credit. Having Element Lad go undercover as Fred the Hammer Williamson is a bold choice.
Yeah.
But at least he doesn't have to change his haircut.
No, he doesn't have to do that. He does have to color it, though.
He does change his skin color, and he does put on a really cool handlebar mustache. But
yeah, so it's Element Lad and Colossal Boy go undercover yeah. to see if they can figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, there's another attack in the restaurant district,
mm-hmm.
which I also find just very weird that you would just have a whole district of Metropolis, you know, just like the yeah. island of Manhattan is nothing but restaurants. And yep. it just seems very weird.
But I do love the fact that since he's undercover, Element Lad cannot use
right.
his incredibly powerful right. traumite abilities. So he falls back on his other power, using his Legion leadership to call in a ringer. And all of a sudden, the explosions ring out and Superboy.
I got to say that zoom
screaming
shot.
Screaming out of the year 1994. Yeah.
That shot of Superboy looks really, really cool. I really like that shot.
That is a really great shot. And again, you know,
very well drawn. Kiesel.
That's a Kiesel. That's definitely Kiesel. I mean, yes, I will say that the zoom and the swoosh and the big thing, that is a thing. But if you look at the face and you look at the screen, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kiesel and Giffen are an underrated team. And it's another moment where you're not allowed to forget that Superboy is in the Legion. Every once in a while, he'll just pop up. And that's important going into this era of Legion of Superheroes for reasons. We'll get there.
Yeah, sure. You know, later after the disaster's over, Superboy and Brainiac 5 sit down to play a game, and which looks like a weird version of Galaga or something.
I'm not sure if it's Galaga or if it's like, I was thinking maybe it's the equivalent of like a Risk or something, but
there seems to be a lot of zipping and flying and booming and shooting kind of stuff in there.
Yeah, that's cool.
But it's a two player game, and Superboy is able to finally win a game by mentioning the fact that Supergirl's sure hanging around a lot in the future, huh?
Yes.
And that throws off Brainiac 5.
That's really well done. And I do love the fact that in the middle of this crisis, these two old buddies just sit down. It's some dead time to play a game. And it reminds us just how young our heroes are supposed to be. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys, I would say on the outside, the oldest Legionnaires are meant to be 20 right now. No mm-hmm. matter how they're drawn, looking 35, you look at this and it's nice to see, you know, Superboy just hanging out with his old pal who is the grandson of the guy who's going to start to kill him here in a few years when he grows up. you know, that's really kind of neat. But also, I think Superboy cheated. I think he did it on purpose, and he cheated. He wanted to win a game.
Yeah.
Cheating Superboy.
We may get a little bit of a foreshadowing as Invisible Kid 2's sister leaves the Legion HQ, and as she passes through the force field, we see some little schnick, schnick, zip, 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 zip things happen on. So, but we'll find out more about that later. In the meantime, we discover that these two bombings are all part of a ploy to say, hey, if you guys don't pay me, what is it, a million credits, I will kill President Mom. And everyone's like, no, not President Mom.
You can't kill President Mom. You
definitely cannot
blow up
kill
the
President
science
Mom.
Police, but don't kill President
Mom. Oh, yeah,
Mom.
They do blow up the science police HQ.
And we get a wonderful moment where Zendak is like, all right, fine, I'll let you use the White Witch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's another thing where I really love the use of White Witch in this era, because she's way weird and crazy and anachronistic. And as much as we complain about Projector coming from planet Camelot, White Witch basically comes, you know, from planet Fifth Dimension, but everybody treats it like it's weird, and she's creepy and she's off-putting. And Zendak is like, yeah, whatever. I mean, it won't do any good, but it's nice to see the treatment of her magic as something, you know, freaky and unbelievable and hard to wrap your mind around.
It's still weird that she's using Dungeons and Dragons ideas of you got to prep your spells for the day.
Yeah, that's beautiful, though. That's how I feel like that's the thing that makes her stand out, because it's a clever way of holding her back from being able to do everything. It's more clever than, say, kryptonite or lead poisoning, or if you rip my suit, I turn into
a... So who would win in a fight? Would it be White Witch or Superboy?
Ah, but does the White Witch have time to prepare?
It doesn't matter. She's using magic, right?
Right, but...
Anything that she would throw at him would hamper him in some way.
I'm just saying, look at the White Witch. She's the one who comes from a different world, lost her parents early, has pointy things on her head. You give her time to prepare, she could be ready for anything. The White Watch. The White Witch is Batman.
Okay.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
So, the Legion of Superheroes is about to change. They're going to change. It doesn't happen now. It's going to happen in the next block of comics that we are going to review. But they are splitting the Legion of Superheroes comics. We're actually getting two Legion of Superheroes comics. The first will be the Legion of Superheroes. And then we will also have the Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, which I thought Chameleon Boy was the only one that had a tail. But I guess that's only when he's in a certain shape-shifting ability. So I don't know. What's going on here, Matthew?
Okay, so in 1984, The Legion is one of DC's hottest books.
Yeah.
And DC Comics was really heavily into prestige format stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were creating a new format with Mando paper and a flexographic printing system, which sounds super cool, but in practice, really isn't. But they chose a couple of books to relaunch with new volumes to kind of sell this more expensive new option. So they relaunched Legion of Superheroes with a new number one. And then this book, which had previously been Superboy, then Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, then Legion of Superheroes, becomes Tales of the Legion. And of course, they did the same thing with Teen Titans. They relaunched Teen Titans as another new Teen Titans book, and then the existing Titans book became Tales of the Teen Titans. And
so if I understand what they're doing, Legion of Superheroes gets rebooted. It's the one that's going to have the new stories in it. And then
not yet.
So they're going to start with the reprints, because I was kind of confused in the way that Paul Levitz was talking about it in the letters column, because he's like, hey, listen, Tales of the Legion is going to continue on the numbering, and we're going to start off with the Earth War series, and then the Legion of Superheroes in a few weeks will have new stuff. And I'm like, what's going on? What book do I buy? I'm confused. I'm going to stop reading comics. And here Paul Levitz killed the comics industry.
As this launch takes place, there are two monthly Legion and two monthly Teen Titans books. But, and this is important, the newsstand copies, the newsstand distribution model is no longer in play for Legion of Superheroes Volume 4. So if you are me and it's 1984 and you're going to the Pump and Pantry on the edge of town, you can no longer go and buy both Legion of Superheroes books off the stands. You can buy Tales of the Legion.
Now, do those contain new stories or no?
Yes.
Okay.
They will contain new stories. And I have for the first, I think Tales of the Legion goes up until either issue 320 or 325 with new material.
Right.
And then starts reprinting Legion of Superheroes Volume 3.
Doing that old X-Men thing.
Yeah. But what we are going to do is, as the two books come out together in the next few issues of Legion of Superheroes, we are going to go through these in as close to basically chronological order as we can.
And then my understanding, so in the way that it's explained, so the Legion of Superheroes will have new stories in it, right?
Yes.
The Tales of the Legion of Superheroes will have new tales in it for a while. And then what will happen is they will do reprints, and then everybody, they're trying to force everybody over to the higher quality, higher priced Legion of Superheroes book. And then if you can wait a year, then those tales that are appearing in the Legion of Superheroes book will filter their way down to the newsstand copies of Tales of the Legion of Superheroes.
Correct.
Okay.
Because they were trying, well, they were in the process of switching from newsstand distribution to exclusively through the comic shops. And, you know, we do have to remember in 2023, when pretty much everything is either online or exclusively through comic shops, in 84, most of your comic books are going to be at your Skags and your B. Daltons and, you know, your S&S Drugs. And the people who have access to comic shops in the 80s are probably more than today, to be honest, but won't be what they will be in 5 or 6 years. So when Legion Volume 3 starts, it gives you a reason to go and find a comic store. And this is, I think it's still a little early for this, but this is the point where DC starts actually having in their comics, find your local comic shop. You know, you start seeing little ads that'll help you find a shop to go and buy these direct market comics. So, yeah, Tales of the Legion of Superheroes has new Legion material separate and distinct of what's happening in Legion of Superheroes. And at a certain point in Tales of the Legion, the team is separated, kind of like the Legion Lost swap that they did in both like 97 and also 2011.
Right.
But yeah, most of the time, what we're going to do is we're just going to jump back and forth until the universe catches up with itself. And probably by, I don't know, issue 145 of Legion Podcast, it will probably just be Legion Volume 3 and whatever weird crossover nonsense comes in.
Yeah, yeah. It's very fascinating because that's kind of the way the digital model is today, right? If you want to go and buy the full version of the digital comic as its release day and date through Comixology or through other apps, you'll pay that $3.99. However, if you want to go to the cheap route, and you just want to subscribe to the Marvel app or the DC app, and you just want to read comics occasionally, and you're not really worried about, you know, the current storyline, then you're going to get, you know, stories that are 6 months late. You're going to get issues that come out 6 months later on the DC app. And I think now they've reduced it to 3 months or something like that. But it, it kind of is following that same thing. We would prefer, and honestly, my opinion, the only reason why we have this big disparity and why digital comics on day and date release aren't $1.99 is because the comic book stores threw a fit and freaked out the publishers. Same reason why we don't have as many day and date release movies anymore because on digital, because the theater chains freaked out and threw a fit and it scared the movie studios, when in reality they could all make tons of money by doing both, by satisfying both markets. And it's a archaic way of thinking. And it's so archaic, we can go back to 1984 and see DC trying to do it and how it kind of honestly didn't work out for them in that way.
And I will say one good thing about it. There comes a point in Legion history, and it's not too far off, where you get two Legion issues a month. One is drawn by Dan Jurgens, one is drawn by Steve Lytle, and the Legion has never and probably will never look better.
Very cool.
Legion of Superheroes number 313, Death Threat. Published July 1984. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art Keith Giffen on layouts and Larry Malstead on finishes. Synopsis: is there a traitor in the science police?
I like this opening line where they're like, hey, it's the year 2984, not the Middle Ages like those backward morons on Orando.
Well, it's still 2984 on Orando, too. I mean,
yeah, but they're all Orando backwards. The President Mom is really implying that everyone's a moron on Orando.
Well, I mean, we're from Kansas, where it just, you know, ended up being 2012. So
no, we're just as advanced as everyone else. We don't see people living in sod huts or, you know, tilling with a horse drawn plow. We don't really see that anymore, but
we don't.
Definitely in Orando, that is what's going on. And poor Block is just a big klutz. And I'm not really sure what the whole point of spending a page and a half of his bumbling around is supposed to show us or prove to us or what. I'm not really sure.
Like, you know, we've touched on this before, and I think that at this point, and I believe it was in the Legion handbook, or the Legion Outpost handbook, the big book that I used to have, and I don't know where I put it because, you know, things are different. Giffen was talking, and they did an interview during this era. Giffen was talking about Block, and in his mind, and remember, he's not just the artist, he's the co-plotter. In his mind, Block is younger than all the other Legionnaires. He is he's the dryad equivalent, Giffen says, of being about 12. So he's weirder and more awkward and more childlike. And I feel like they're setting Block up as this, you know, this young character in this giant body to kind of give him a little bit of a thing where, you know, he's nice, he's gentle, but he's also, you know, 7 feet tall and made of solid rock and a little bit clumsy and still growing into his feet.
I don't know. It just seems like comedy relief where no comedy relief is needed.
It definitely does come off as comedy, but I think it, I don't feel like it's meant to be funny, ha ha. I think it's meant to be funny, aw.
It comes off as funny, ha ha, though.
Well,
look at the big, dumb giant. Ha, wah, 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 wah. Meanwhile, the science police are doing their job and stopping international drugs, fentanyl, from flooding into the earth. And and I love that the way that you find out you're under arrest is, stop! You're under science police arrest. Like, what other kind of arrest is there?
Well, there's police arrest, and then there's cardiac arrest.
You can just say that you're under arrest. I think everyone gets that. Also, I really, really hate science police boots, and I really, really hate the new science police helmets. They just look dumb and ugly and stupid, especially moon boots, which I understand are making a comeback recently. But, man, their uniforms are the worst. I would rather they wear the coverall that Sunboy wears in the last issue than wear what they're wearing here.
I actually agree with you. And I feel like, you know, it's a design, it's a choice, but I also feel like it's a little bit of a flaw because, yeah, we're not necessarily supposed to look at the science police and go, hey, look how cool they are, because this is a show about the heroes. But having the science police look this incredibly goofy and, you know, kind of Bigfoot cartoony schmuckish almost really kind of works against the story that they're telling, because this whole arc is, hey, look how cool the science police are. Look what the science police could do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the science police.
Yeah,
when the science police are off screen, everyone should ask, wonder what the science police are doing.
Oh, meanwhile, because everyone's been asking, what's going on with Starboy and Dreamgirl? We get to go and see them hanging out in their hangout world, where Starboy is clearly using a Visa MasterCard, while Mr. T, Larry Bud Melman, Captain America, and Hawkman all make guest appearances in this issue.
Well, sure, it's Ventura. Ventura is kind of a weird world. You remember the Luck Lords? They're from Ventura.
But yeah. I'm not really clear on why Mr. T, Larry Bud Melman, Captain America. I can understand a Hawkman, because Thanagarians are still around. But those three in particular, okay, all right, whatever. I understand Larry Bud and Mr. T are super big at this time. And if we can slide in a Marvel reference into our comic book to let the kids know, I guess. I don't know. It's just, it really draws you out of the story as soon as you see it.
I always like it when they do stuff like that. I mean, but yeah, the Larry Bud Melman thing, I didn't even catch until you said something, because I looked at that and I was like, huh, okay. Is that Clara Peller? I don't know. Because I was thinking maybe, you know, it's from the future. But the Ventura thing, not the Boulevard, but the Ventura planet and Tom and Nora's vacation is going to take center stage in an issue or two. Which,
oh, really?
Yeah, which remarkably is going to be the first Legion issue that I bought off the stands as a new issue. So when we get there, I'll go, ooh.
Well, it sure seems in this little vignette that Dream Girl is finding any way that she can to not spend time with Tom, because she passes out and she's like, a Legionnaire is going to die, Shug. We got to do something about this.
You know,
and it's just, and it's just like, oh man, she really doesn't like spending any time with Starboy. Well, it's probably Starboy, because he's going to kill himself if he has to go through any more stress of deciding whether she loves him or not.
Starboy doesn't die until 2014.
Well, see, that's when. Oh, Shug, I've been meaning to tell you something for a long time, Shug.
Really?
Anyway. They decide that they're going to go and oh, yeah, this is the part where we find out that the science police do mind scans and that the robots will take you off to jail. And we also figure out that Shrinking Violet is going to go and talk to Duplicate Boy and say, how dare you? You should have known that wasn't me from the beginning and you didn't do anything. And so she punches him right in the face.
Yeah, well, and he knew it wasn't her, and she knew that he knew. She actually says, you knew someone took my place. You saw it. Why did you just leave? And this is also an interesting bit where we see that Duplicate Boy is a big old dummy.
Yeah.
He is slow, and he's not the sharpest bulb at the bottom of the barrel, you know? He's just dumb, because we have this moment where, like, oh well, the crane broke down and we need to put the dome on the new science hospital, and he's like, okay, well, let me think for a minute.
Yeah, I'll use my magnetism powers of duplication.
Use magnetism.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get to do a Dream Girl as a Southern grifter, and I'm gonna do Cecil Turtle as a Duplicate Boy. My adoring public.
There is also a moment where Gigi is addressing the science police, almost like it's an episode of Hill Street Blues, which was one of the more popular shows at the time.
Yes, an absolute reference. And I wonder if Hill Street Blues isn't the reason why we're undercover with the SPs.
It could be. I mean, it really could be. Although, yeah, maybe. I did find it interesting that Gigi says that one of a Crime Watchers probe picked up a rumor of something called a block war. And it's like, sounds like some fanboy's fantasy, actually.
Hey,
we're going to have a whole planet of blocks fighting each other.
Planet of the blocks. I think he's the last survivor.
No. He had a whole family of people, I thought.
They were humans. Block is not human. Block is a dryad.
I know. I thought there were a whole bunch of other dryads on the planet with him.
Uh-uh. Not so far, anyway.
Okay. All right. Anyway, they figure out that they're going to go and protect the president, President Mom. Everybody shows up to do the President Mom duties. And they find out that there's only 15 minutes left to save Mom, because the bomb is about to go off. I want to come back to Daxam in a minute. But in the end, they stop the bomb. They save everybody. They do what they're supposed to do. And they catch the guy that had this plan that he was going to kill the president of the United Planets for $1 million. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out that he sent threats to every delegate that was going to go to this big conference.
Every member of the United Planets Council, and some of them paid up.
Yeah, some of them paid up. And the whole idea was, well, if the bomb had gone off, the people that paid up wouldn't be alive to tell everyone else that, you know, that there were, that this guy was, you know, threatening multiple people at the same time, which, I'll be honest, that is a brilliant plan, right? Because everybody's focus is on, oh, President Mom, she's the most important thing. We need to focus all our attention on President Mom, also because Jim will stomp on us if we don't, and then not even pay attention to anything going on with the other delegates. And I'm like, that's actually a very brilliant plan.
And honestly, it feels very realistic to have, you know, oh man, our president is under threat. Oh, and your guys too, I'm sure.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back on Daxam, as we wrap up this issue, you know, they're continuing to do the rebuilding of the planet. And I can't help but think, you know, because Chameleon Boy's flying through and he's seeding the planet and everything. And you sure you've got Wolverine and sure you've got
Timberwolf.
Timberwolf and Ultra Boy doing their things and Mon-El doing his things. I can't help but think that they're actually not transforming the planet back into a round sphere. Mm-hmm. But because of the things that they're doing, there's just a giant head of Darkseid floating in space with all this green on it. And what they've done is created a giant Chia head.
You know, if you give it Element Lad's haircut, I'm down.
Yeah, I'm serious.
I would live on planet Daxam, bro. That would be great.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty much the issue.
Yeah. And it's a nice resolution. We, you know, we do find out apparently where they got Dennis Nedry's whole subplot from Jurassic Park, because that's literally mm-hmm. what this ends up being.
Yeah, it turns out it's not somebody in the science police. It's actually a subcontractor that comes in to do the programming, who's like, yeah, mm-hmm. I'll just do this and I'll mess with the machine and that'll allow me to do my DNA crazy plot.
He's going to sell it to Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
No, wait.
No, he didn't sell it to Samuel L. Jackson. He sold it to...
I was mixing it up with Deep Blue Sea. But even so, yeah, I need to mention one more thing.
Okay.
We've talked about President Mom, and the Legion does have a responsibility to protect the president of the science police. I get that. But once again, as this issue ends, Colossal Boy is like, I don't like how you threaten my mom. And I'm like, this whole President Mom thing is starting to become a recurring thing for him, where he either threatens or actually does damage people or damage things or destroy buildings in a flying rage because his mother might be threatened. And I feel like that's kind of a problem. You know, if you're a police officer and you're investigating something and your mother is involved in it, generally speaking, they'll be like, okay, you're off this case, dude.
Right.
You don't get to be a part of this case because you might be compromised.
I thought they talked about that or tried to address it when she first became president. And mm-hmm. they were just like, well, it's probably not going to be that big of a deal.
Sure. And 7 years later, here it is becoming a big deal again.
I mean, they saved everybody. So, I mean.
Yeah, but then the stalwart hero at the end of the thing is like, well, now I'm going to kill you.
Well, he didn't really say that, but.
Everybody on the Legion talks like Cecil Turtle now.
No. Who talks like Jim Neighbors? I forget.
Surprise.
Yeah, I forget. Probably. One of them talks like Jim Neighbors. I forget who that was. That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
I think we learned that if you're going to tamper with the central computer, you need to also steal the dinosaur DNA and not get spit in your face.
I think we also learned that you should not mess with Jim's mom.
And you shouldn't tug on Superboy's cape either.
That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. Hey, listen, we want to keep this show going through 2023, and the only way we're going to be able to do it is with your help. I got to tell you, the coffers, the place where we keep our pennies to keep this show going, is almost empty, and we need your help to make sure that you can continue to get Legion of Superheroes reviews and commentary and the Legion coming Legion Clubhouse coming at you on a super regular basis. So if you would, please, 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 if you're listening, you're like, hey, I enjoyed this show. Some good comments, some good commentary. I want to see this show continue. Then by all means, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Sign up for the $5 a month, the silver level membership. That's about $1, $1.50 per episode that we release. That's a pretty good value if you ask me. And we can keep this show going far, far, far into the future, maybe all the way to 2984. So until next time, I'm here's looking at you, kid.
And I'm President Dad.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.